and weather. NFL Monday Night Football, the Bears beat Seattle 24-17. In Major League Baseball, the Brewers beat Cincinnati 8-0. Cubbies over Arizona 5-1. Cardinals beat Atlanta, so the standings stay the same. Cubs still lead the Brewers by 2.5 games. The Cardinals are 5.5 games out in third place in the NL Central. The White Sox were off. Tonight, the Brewers host Cincinnati again up at Miller Park. Cubs play again in Arizona. White Sox play in Cleveland. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service on this Tuesday, the 18th. Partly sunny and warm, light showers, possible thunderstorms off and on throughout the day. A high of 76. Looking at the radar, the rain is moving in a southeasterly direction out of Milwaukee, heading towards us right now. 66 degrees in both Racine and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. Now, 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. Many of you have heard of the highly regarded chamber music series at Carthage College. A new season of chamber music concerts will begin this Thursday evening, 7:30 at Siebert Chapel, a concert by a very impressive and intriguing chamber group called Project Trio. We're going to introduce you to their leader in just a moment, but first we want to give you a little sample of what they do. So here is their own arrangement and performance of the classic song, Birdland. Again, this is Project Trio. String bass, cello, and flute, Project Trio in their arrangement of Birdland.
And now for the next few minutes, it's a great pleasure to speak with the bass player for Project Trio, namely Peter Seymour. And we're going to find out from him the origins of this ensemble and this intriguing combination of instruments. Peter Seymour, we welcome you to the morning show.
Hey, Greg, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Thanks for making time for this conversation. So we don't see an array of instruments quite like this very often. I don't think I've ever seen flute, bass, and cello. How in the world did you guys get this audacious idea to put this combination of instruments together?
Absolutely. Well, you know, the three of us met over 20 years ago now while we were students. In college, we went to the Great Cleveland Institute of Music, which is a classical music conservatory. We were all there at the same time, and we were, you know, very serious classical musicians at the time. But we were also very close friends, and the three of us and a lot of other people in our friend group were not just into classical music. We were into all different types of music. And so there was a lot of after-hours music making that was going on. So, you know, that is really where the where the beginnings of Project Trio started, really just in friendship and playing music together.
So how does it work in terms of constructing the pieces that you play, whether they are commissioned or you are having a hand in arranging something that already exists for this intriguing array of instruments? And in order to just sort of make the textures make sense and the balance of instruments to sort of work well together?
So we actually compose and arrange all of our own music. Everything that people will see at the concert will be created by the three of us. We have worked with a composer or two for some large-scale projects that we have, especially with symphony orchestra. But when it's the trio show, you are hearing the creations of myself and Eric Stevenson and Greg Petillo. How we do it is we get together in a room, and we just start putting ideas out there. And everyone brings different things to the table. And through a lot of experimentation, improvisation, and using our classical sensibilities and our training, we start to construct these pieces. And they really do start with like a little morsel, a little gem. And, you know, I even think of it sometimes like gardening, where you plant a seed and then through hard work, through kind of, you know, working with this seed and growing it, something amazing can grow. Now, a lot of times, some bad stuff grows and that stuff gets pushed aside. But, you know, we occasionally get some great music. But, yeah, it really is. We're more like a rock band. In that way that we really do just get together in a room and bring ideas to the table and make music.
I'm trying to remember if I've heard anything from you that has involved other instruments. I mean, how often is it that it is more than just the three of you?
You know, we collaborate with people occasionally, and we love to collaborate. But it's not our main thing, mainly because, of course, Project Trio is a musical entity and it's our passion, but it also is a business. So, you know, our business is we are a finely well-oiled machine that goes out and plays music and hits the stage. And so a lot of times with collaboration, it also takes a lot of, you know, extra rehearsals are bringing someone else on tour. It's very hard to bring more people, you know, all around the country and all around the world. And so that's why when we go out, we are mostly just the three of us. Now, at the show that we're doing with you guys, we're doing a very unique thing, which we're going to be working with the young musicians and the orchestra. And actually, that's where our collaboration really is in full force. Something that we do many, many times a year is we work with several symphony orchestras of student and professional level. We have arrangements of our music for trio and pretty much any ensemble you can imagine. So we actually very often collaborate with larger ensembles. And it's less where we just say, hey, let's collaborate with this clarinet player or this violin player. That we do for more fun. And we do that for our own, you know, music-making pleasure with our friends. And so we are often collaborating, but we don't always hit the concert stage with it.
I'm speaking with Peter Seymour, who is the double bassist and, by the way, also the CEO of Project Trio coming to Carthage. This summer had the pleasure of playing piano for an array of talented string bass players from China who came to Carthage for a special music camp. And it reminded me all over again of sort of the special beauty, but also the ferocious challenges of playing string bass well.
Absolutely.
What is it that drew you to this particular instrument? And was it love at first sight? And, I mean, have you felt comfortable on the bass? Did you feel comfortable with this formidable instrument right from the start?
I've always been a bass player. It was love at first sight. And I'm still not comfortable with it. The bass is a beast. But I will say that, you know, like many young musicians, I was fortunate to start in, you know, my public school music program. And my mother was an amateur bassoon player, and she actually played bassoon throughout college. And, you know, she actually told me she had always wanted to play the bass, but she ended up on the bassoon. So when it was time to pick instruments, she had mentioned that, you know, the bass is really cool and that if I thought it was a great instrument, I should give it a try. It did. It looked cool. I loved it. I'd always loved, you know, the feeling of carrying that big thing around and people saying, what is that? You know, it's a big conversation starter. And so, you know, I've always been a man of people. So I've always loved playing the bass. But, yeah, the bass is one of the most challenging instruments there is, especially to play it well.
Right. I remember the first string bass player that I ever interviewed on this program, that's more than 20 years ago now, just explained the fundamental simple point that there's just because the various points on the fingerboard are so far apart that there is more room for error in terms of intonation. I mean, that's just one point of difficulty, but I should think a really significant challenge in playing the bass well is just knowing where on those long, long strings your finger exactly needs to go.
Most definitely. And even more than that, it's a big instrument, and so it takes strength. You know, it doesn't take a lot to push your finger down on a violin string. You still have to have accuracy and precision, but the actual strength of the finger isn't necessarily. To fully depress the string onto the bass fingerboard and make that sound that's pure in itself is a difficult thing. And that's why when you hear young bass players, they sound terrible. But I say every young bass player out there who's listening, keep practicing, because with all that practice, with all that strength, you will eventually be able to make a pure, beautiful sound. And but bass has come such a long way, even since I was in college and in high school. The level of bass playing in the States and in the world is absolutely stunning. It's incredible.
It really is. And when you hear it played well, it's a very special treat indeed. One more question about this unique texture of Project Trio, in which we have the two lowest string instruments with one of the highest of the wind instruments. And I think if the three of you had gone to just about anybody in the music world and said, hey, we have this great idea, we're going to form a trio with bass, cello, and flute, I mean, most music experts would probably shake their head in disbelief and try to dissuade you of the thought. What is it that you have to do in terms of putting together your arrangements to make this texture work, for it not to be overly thick on the bottom and so spare that it doesn't hold together? It does hold together, but I don't understand the miracle that makes that possible.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you know, when we're playing music in any style of music, it's all about playing your role. You know, there's the melody, and then there's the accompaniment, and there, you know, and so we have a really role-based approach to kind of composition. And so all three of us are taking different roles at different times. And so if you understand your role, if you understand that you are in the middle or in the bottom or in the top, you know, it becomes easier to kind of clean that texture up. Now, I will say that our cellist, Eric Stevenson, certainly has the biggest job because, like you're saying, we have two bass instruments. And so he really has to become that middle voice and clear that texture. He also has to create so many of our harmonies because, of course, with the bass and the flute, you know, it's a lot of, like, the flute is always single line, even though Greg can sing and can beatbox. But, you know, it's single note. The bass also, of course, you can play chords, but they're not as clear. So the cello really does a huge job. And Eric's an amazing player, and he does the huge job of creating so much of the lush harmony and giving us a large and beautiful kind of middle to our ensemble.
Right. I'm sure that makes a huge difference in why it is such a satisfying combination of sounds. It really, really is. Last quick question.
Please.
Say something about wearing the hat of CEO as with Project Trio, and what kind of a challenge is it to balance all of those concerns with sort of the purer pursuit of making music with these dear friends of yours?
Yeah, You know, it's something that, first, I love to do. And second of all, it's very important. And we live in a great day and age now where musicians truly can do their own thing. They can run their own businesses. They're, back in the day, even, again, when I was in college, high school, and before, there were a lot of gatekeepers to being a musician. There were record labels, there were executives, there were agents, and if you didn't have an in with these gatekeepers, you could not be in. And nowadays, in the, you know, the internet revolution and the changing of times, you truly can do everything yourself. The Project Trio has been traveling full-time now for 12 years. We do not have a booking agent. We do not have a tour manager. We don't have a record label. We do all of these things for ourselves. Everyone has different jobs in the group, but we make all of these things happen. So not only are we creating everything on stage, but we're creating everything off stage. And I have taken on the kind of challenge of overseeing all of the business and also doing kind of the booking tour management side of things, which is, you know, in the end of the day, that's the money-making part of the thing. So I happens to be that I take great joy in it, and I take great pride in it. I find a ton of creativity in that side of the job, where I think some people think, oh, that's the business stuff. I don't want to do the business stuff. That's just it's actually a highly creative job. And any musicians out there who are interested in doing business, remember that a lot of creativity goes into it, and kind of go after that business side. So much of it is created on that end before we're even able to step up on the stage. But yeah, Project Trio is, you know, just the three of us making it happen.
Wow. Well, there are a whole lot of people here in southeastern Wisconsin who are excited about your performance coming up later this week, and I appreciate you making time for this little chat in your very busy schedule. Pete Seymour, who is the double bassist and CEO and manager of Project Trio, coming to Carthage. Best wishes, safe travels.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate it. See you soon.
You're listening to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to be joined by Dr. Ed Kawakami, who is the Director of Orchestral Activities at Carthage College. He has a hand in Thursday night's concert and actually played a part in Project Trio being invited to be part of Carthage's Chamber Music Series. But before we get to that, let's hear more from Project Trio. They are going to be playing a wide range of music on Thursday night, and all three of them are classically trained musicians, but this is an example of Project Trio far away from their classical roots, but making music in a really spectacular fashion. This is an original arrangement called Sweet Pea. And again, this is Project Trio coming to Carthage Thursday night. We want to remind you that there is... Sweet Pea by the group Project Trio. You're listening to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD, and we are previewing for you what promises to be a marvelous concert coming up on Thursday with this special group called Project Trio, part of Carthage's Chamber Music Series. And now I'm really happy to be sitting opposite one of my faculty colleagues at Carthage, Dr. Ed Kawakami, who is the director of orchestral activities at Carthage. And for those of you who have not heard the Carthage Orchestra in some time, the group has enjoyed a marvelous renaissance under the leadership of Dr. Kawakami. They are playing so wonderfully. And the orchestra and some other young orchestral musicians are going to be part of Thursday's concert at Carthage. And so that's why we have Dr. Kawakami here to talk about that and about his acquaintance with this group called Project Trio. Dr. Kawakami, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Good to have you here. Good to have you back. So you were telling me before we went on the air that you have at least a small hand in Project Trio being invited to come to Carthage. They are a group that you knew something about. Tell us about your acquaintance with them.
Sure. It's really a tiny hand. I just floated the idea out to our amazing Tiana, and she did all the rest.
Tiana Conway kind of coordinates the
Chamber
Music Series.
Absolutely. She's done amazing things, and she brings in phenomenal acts. I really became acquainted with Project Trio through the flautist, Greg Patillo. I was in a former life a flautist, and at one point I tried learning one of his pieces, and I thought, wow, this is really neat. And then I realized how difficult beatboxing and playing flute really is in combination. So I gave that up because I was well past my playing prime. I was into my conducting studies at that point. But just knowing what they've been doing and having this wonderful crossover and melding of styles, I think that's really part of the future of classical music, and I'm putting air quotes around that, of course, but you can't see that.
Right. Do you remember how it is you even came across this particular piece and his name?
I think it was the YouTube rabbit hole. Clicking and clicking, and all of a sudden I found this beatboxing flautist, and I thought, wow, this is a really neat genre. And at first I was a little dismissive because I thought this is just a shtick. Hmm. But when you hear Greg play, there's absolute virtuosity in it.
Absolutely. One of my first questions to Peter Seymour, the bassist and the leader of the group, is just how unconventional this combination of instruments is. How in the world did it come together? And of course it comes together because the three of them were friends and were just daring enough and maybe audacious enough to try to make music together, but it's just so out of the ordinary. Tell us your feelings about the group in terms of what they managed to do with this really strange array of ordinary instruments that we just don't think of together in this combination.
Right. You don't think of a bassist, and I believe they're all classically trained, and I know that Greg Patillo definitely is classically trained. I think he has a master's in flute performance from the Cincinnati Conservatory. So they're all phenomenal masters of their instrument. I think it just goes to show you that when you put virtuosity together in any combination and have a vision and have a little bit of a smirk and a smile and a sense of humor about it, you get these amazing projects that come about. And you know, we in the classical world like to silo things. We like to pretend that it's something that ought not to be touched. but when we start messing with these combinations, there's some really interesting things that happen, really entertaining things that happen, as well as artistic in their value.
Yeah. So tell us about the genesis of this collaboration. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of times when chamber groups come to Carthage, they come and perform a concert, and that's essentially it. But this is a very different model in which they are sharing the stage with some of Carthage's musicians and some musicians from other places as well. How did that collaborative piece of it come to be part of this?
Sure. We're collaborating also with Lakeshore Youth Philharmonic, both of the groups, Bradford High School and also Harborside Academy. They're bringing their musicians to perform with us. Project Trio has a definite educational bent to them. They like to go out and teach, and one of I didn't know this about them, but Tiana's worked with them before, and she says that one of the amazing things that they do is the education that they do with school kids when they go out into the schools and they reach out and they perform with them, they do things with them. And it's such a thrill. We're essentially a glorified backup band to Project Trio.
On Thursday.
Yeah. And we're absolutely fine with that because it gives us a chance to be rock stars, first of all. We get to be up on the stage with them, and it's a completely different environment in the concert hall. It's no longer just play the piece, get applause, play the piece, get applause, but there's more audience interaction. It's almost as if this unorthodox format frees the audience to react. And I think that's a wonderful thing. You know, Mozart wrote letters home to his sister about how they couldn't move on from a movement after they'd premiered it because the audience was so rowdy and wanted an encore of the previous movement. So the audience not applauding and not interacting is a relatively new thing. And for us to be able to do that and to give students, young students, college age and younger, the opportunity to see how music can be different and how it can be innovative and how learning their scales and doing these technical exercises in their bedrooms or in the practice rooms actually leads to something fun and something interesting and something that can be innovative.
Mm. So what are the pieces of music on which you are going to be collaborating with Project Trio on Thursday's concert? And how long have you had them? And what kind of undertaking has it been to get these prepared?
Sure. We've had them, well, school started 2 weeks ago, maybe a week and a half ago. So it's been a rather short journey. It's been the case also with the Lakeshore Youth Philharmonic, and of course the public schools haven't been in session very long either. So we haven't had the pieces very long, which is also a nice bit of training for the students. It's like the professional world where you get a piece 3 days before you perform it, and then you perform it. It's a little bit more leisurely than that, but they still have that sense of urgency, which is wonderful. Two of the pieces, I believe, are original pieces composed by Project Trio. And the third piece is Brahms' Hungarian Dance, number 5. And that's, of course, a well-known work that they've arranged for themselves and for an orchestra. So we'll be performing those pieces on Thursday evening.
Wow. And it sounds like they know something about orchestration and arrangement, and certainly when it comes to themselves. And is that the case with what they've given you to prepare for Thursday?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic music. There are little bits of challenging parts for our college students. There are sections that are standard and relatively technically easy so that our younger students can enjoy them as well. It's really about the experience for the students, and having them be able to participate in this is an absolute joy. It's such a privilege.
So how is this going to get actually put together once Project Trio comes to town?
It's a little bit of a rush schedule. Project Trio is in demand, as you can imagine, around the country, if not around the world. So they're flying in Wednesday morning, or Wednesday. They come up, I think, the evening, but they'll miss our first rehearsal on Wednesday. So on Wednesday, we'll have the joined groups, all the guests that we have, as well as the Carthage Philharmonic. We'll rehearse the piece for about an hour and a half, pieces, rather. And then on Thursday is when we first get to meet them. Thursday morning, I believe Project Trio is doing a number of runouts to local schools and doing their educational endeavors. And then that evening, we'll have the first and only rehearsal, and then the performance at 7:30.
Wow.
Yeah.
How big a group is this? I mean, when in terms of the Carthage Orchestra and these high school musicians who are actually joining you, just how mammoth an ensemble will this be?
We're if you're familiar with the stage area of Siebert Chapel, it's fairly large. We're actually concerned that we won't be able to fit everyone. Mm. We're looking at perhaps 100 to 120 musicians on the stage,
wow,
as well as Project Trio.
Wow, you could do some Richard Strauss while you're at it. So, but I don't think that's on the program for Thursday.
Not this time.
Well, how exciting. This is great. So remind our listeners about exactly when and exactly where this concert is on Thursday, which is open to the public.
It is open to the public. It's at 7:30 p.m. in AF Siebert Chapel, which is on the Carthage campus. It's a ticketed event, but free. And I don't remember the URL. Do you remember
we'll,
the URL?
We'll okay. share that later.
Wonderful,
so,
thank
but,
you.
Very good. So again, this is Project Trio, part of the well-known chamber music series at Carthage, this concert Thursday evening, which will feature also the Carthage Philharmonic and some area high school musicians joining them as well for what promises to be a really stunning evening of music making and fun. And Dr. Kawakami, I want to be sure to take a couple of minutes to talk about the great things that have been happening with the Carthage orchestral program under your leadership over the last several years. And I want to make sure we don't run out of time before I acknowledge a really wonderful honor that you were given at the end of this previous school year when you were given Carthage's Distinguished Teaching Award, which is a really, really high honor. And I know something that was a delightful surprise for you. Just how big a surprise was it?
Huge. It was a massive surprise. I work with unbelievable colleagues. Greg, since you're in the department, you know how wonderful our colleagues are, and you among them. I've been privileged to observe fantastic teaching from everyone, and the care that all the faculty members take in their students, and the genuine joy and affection that they have when their students learn something. And to be granted and gifted this honor, I felt a little overwhelmed, because there are so many others more deserving of it. And as I mentioned in my remarks last spring, it's an honor that I really do share with my colleagues, because it is, you know, it takes a village, as the saying goes, and it really does. Mm-hmm. So I share the honor with all of my colleagues and also with all the students there, because, you know, you don't get an award if the team's not, you know, if the team's 0-11, you don't get an award for coaching.
Exactly. I remember that in the presentation, in terms of essentially some of what led to you being given this award, one of the specific comments that was given this was a remark of a student in, I suppose, maybe the nomination process, said that of every course that they'd ever taken at Carthage, yours was the classroom that they felt was the most inclusive of anything they had ever taken at Carthage. And I don't know if that was a music student or not, or just who exactly that was. But I wonder if you could just say a word about what you think that student was probably talking about. What way do you endeavor to make your classrooms or any setting in which you teach as inclusive as possible? What does that mean for you, maybe philosophically and also in terms of nuts and bolts of how you interact with your students, how you speak with them, how you refer to them? What does this inclusivity mean to you?
The guiding philosophy, the teaching philosophy that I've always gone by, is that the subject matter is secondary, and that the primary thing that we do is we teach the people, we teach students, and then we just happen to teach, the subject matter just happens to be music. And we're lucky, you and I, we're really lucky that everyone loves music. We have students that are hungry to learn more, and their homework is something that they can enjoy. You know, they can go in a practice room and they can play a sonata, they can sing an aria, and they can revel in the sound and the musicality. You know, they get to play with art. That's their homework, which is fantastic. But setting up an environment where we're able to teach the student first means that we always have to be able to reach the person. And if we do anything to alienate them, whether they be a minority or whether they be a non-major, and we have a lot of non-majors in our programs, to create an exclusive environment where we exclude people means that we lose the potential to turn off students. And, you know, that there's a statistic that less than 2% of top conservatory grads get a full-time orchestral gig once they graduate, which means that frankly, 98% of even those top conservatory grads aren't getting a job. You know, you do the extrapolation to our Carthage students. And what we do at the very least is we create the next generation, especially with the non-majors, we create the next generation of music lovers. Mm. We create the next generation of people who will send their kids to school with a band instrument or an orchestral instrument or with a choral folio. You know, it's that's what we're doing. And to do that, it really, and I consider it a personal mission of mine, is to make sure that every student understands that I accept them as a person first and foremost. And I know so many of my colleagues do that for their students. We can't teach them if they don't feel accepted. We can't help them if they don't feel that they're safe. And I do my best in my classrooms, as well as my rehearsals, to let them know that they are free to be who they are and to make mistakes. Because if I don't hear the mistakes, I can't fix them. Hmm. If I don't know who they are, I can't tailor my teaching so that it resonates with them. So I really feel it's part of my educational philosophy and also my personal philosophy. You know, you treat people with respect, you treat them with love and affection, and you let them know that you accept them for who they are, first and foremost, and that allows me to be able to reach them as a musician or as an educator or whatever it might be.
Hmm. Well, certainly the rising success, the dramatic improvement of the orchestra program at Carthage has a lot to do with love and acceptance, but it also has a lot to do with driving people to do better and better and better, and setting a bar and wanting people to meet those high expectations and even exceed them and so on. Can you just say a word about what's involved when you take on a program, and that's a big part of the mission, is to not just sort of sustain the success that's already in place, but really to take the orchestra to a new level of excellence as you have. What kinds of things as an educator and musician have you thought about or have been most important to you in that particular gauntlet?
That's a really big question. It's something that I that bounces around my head daily. The philosophy, the guiding philosophy that I brought in when I first stepped on board was buy-in by the students to get them to understand that this isn't just about their education, this isn't just about me, it's not about the school, but it's about what we're creating together. And I, you know, students go through college, we go through life, and occasionally we have opportunities that are given to us where we can really have an impact, where we can leave a lasting legacy. You know, the whole adage about leave it better than you found it. And when I first stepped onto the Carthage campus, that's what I told the students. You have an opportunity to leave something that you can point to in 5-10 years after you graduate and say, I helped build that. I helped elevate that to where it is. And to have pride in what you've done. And I think that really resonates with students, because we all want to be able to have an impact. That's why we do what we do, you and I, Greg, and that's why a lot of people do what they do. They want to have an impact, whether it's be raising a family, whether it's teaching or being an emergency responder. We want to be able to do something to help people to better the world that we're in. And giving that to them and giving them that ownership doesn't take anything away from me. It makes me part of the team. And I try to be careful to use the we and us, those pronouns, so that it emphasizes that it is a joint journey, and it is a journey. It is about the process, and I emphasize that as well. And there's a quick anecdote if I have a moment. We were doing Beethoven 5, and there was a tricky passage in there. There's a fugal passage, and I remember we had been having a little bit of trouble in the rehearsals. It was fairly solid, but it was always a moment that we knew we had to really focus for. And in the performance, I remember it got a little unhinged. It just didn't topple. It just kind of started to lean one way. And we got out of the passage, and I remember this, and it gives me the chills to even think about it. I remember collectively the orchestra take a breath, and I saw them lean forward in their seats, and it wasn't a defeatist, oh, we messed that up. It was, oh, we're going to get this. And it was a wonderful sense of their ownership of the piece and of the ensemble and of their you know, not to get a little cheesy, but of their destinies, you know, and it was really neat to see that.
Mm. See them collectively holding something together that threatened to fly apart.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, fantastic. That is great. So it is a testimony to the level of excellence that the orchestra at Carthage has achieved, the Philharmonic, that you get to take them on tour this year and in a very, very big way. Tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, this is the very first time the orchestra has been able to go on tour. Excuse me. We are taking them to Vienna, Salzburg, and Munich, which is essentially the cradle of symphonic literature. You had Haydn and Beethoven and Mozart and Brahms and Mahler and you know, some will argue, but Schoenberg and Weber and all in that area. The first Viennese school and second Viennese school of composition were there. And you know, Mozart was born in Salzburg, and von Karajan was born in Salzburg, I believe, as well. So it's a wonderful opportunity to take them where what they practice is not just textbook history, but living history for the people that are there.
And where that history was made.
Right.
And you've decided to make it an unconventional tour in that it's really not a performance tour or concert tour in the standard sense of the word. Explain what these musicians, in fact, will be doing.
So instead of having a concert every evening or several of the evenings that we're there, we may have one or two capstone performances, but the majority of the tour will be spent rehearsing. We're trying to right now organize a rehearsal space in the Vienna Concert Hall downstairs and in their recording studio. What a thrill. What an amazing opportunity to be where Mahler premiered some of his symphonies and to rehearse that gives a complete different flavor to it. And to also have master classes from various musicians, professional musicians in Vienna, maybe even a musician from the Vienna Philharmonic come in and talk about or give master classes about what it's like to play in the Vienna Philharmonic or to be a freelance musician in Vienna and Salzburg. Completely different experiences. And for our students to be able to experience that, to walk down the same streets that Beethoven did, to visit Brahms's grave, or perhaps even visit Esterházy, where Haydn was had his patronage, will hopefully bring to life some of these pieces. I know that when I studied in Salzburg, it made a huge difference in how I viewed Mozart. It brought it to life. It, you know, to have eaten at the same restaurants that Mozart may have, or to walk down the same streets and to feel the same cobblestones under my feet that he did as he was perhaps mulling over a melody for one of his operas is just a phenomenal experience. And that's what I'm hoping for our students.
Wow, very good. So that's going to be this coming January I assume at least the vast majority of members of the Carthage Philharmonic will be embarking on. That really is exciting. Let's circle back to the primary reason you joined us today and reiterate the most important information about this performance that is coming up on Thursday featuring this extraordinary small chamber group called Project Trio.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a fantastic opportunity for us to be able to do this and to welcome them. And it's wonderful that Carthage is such a cultural hub for Kenosha and Racine, that this entire area, we have these amazing groups coming in, and if we can have as many people show up, it'd be phenomenal. It's not the typical classical chamber concert that you think of, as you can probably well imagine, as with a beatboxing flautist.
It's going to be an amazing night, that's for sure. And Dr. Ed Kawakami and many talented students here in southeastern Wisconsin, including some of Carthage's own, will be part of this exciting performance Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. in Siebert Chapel. Dr. Ed Kawakami, thank you for joining me for this portion of the morning show.
Thank you so much for having me.
We want to remind you that Thursday night's concert by Project Trio is free and open to the public. But you do need a ticket. You need to reserve your free ticket. And to do so, you should go to www.carthage.edu/tickets. Again, www.carthage.edu/tickets. Or if you prefer, you can call the Fine Arts box office. That phone number is area code 262-551-6661. 262-551-6661. And we finish out the morning show today by enjoying Project Trio's refreshing take on the finale to the overture to Rossini's opera, William Tell. I'm Gregory Berg. Project Trio, in their take on the finale to Rossini's overture to William Tell, with a little bit of Star Wars thrown into the mix in their wonderful, refreshing arrangement. Again, Project Trio performs at Carthage College in Siebert Chapel in a free concert Thursday evening, 7:30 p.m., as part of Carthage's highly regarded chamber music ensemble. Coming up tomorrow on the morning show, a conversation with Jennifer Sassaman, who is from the theater faculty at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. But on this particular occasion, she is wearing the hat as a guest director at the Racine Theater Guild. She is at the helm for their production of the Noel Classic play called Blithe Spirit. And so you will hear my conversation with Jennifer Sassaman and our conversation about this very, very entertaining play. Thursday on the morning show, I look forward to a conversation with Nick Berudian, who has been on the program before. He is the artistic director of the Bell Ensemble. And their next performances sound very intriguing indeed. The title is Two Roads Converged, A Marriage of American Voices. This program will consist of American composers' settings of classic American poetry. So some of the great works of Walt Whitman, Emily Dickinson, Langston Hughes, and many, many more. An array of great American composers will be featured, including Randall Thompson,